This is an iHeart podcast.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show. Another hour of the Jesse Kelly Show. And obviously, we're going to keep you posted on everything that's happening. There was an attack, in case you're just now tuning in. Just happened recently. There was a rocket attack in Iraq against our base. There are American troops hurt, possibly one dead. We're tracking all this. I'll keep you posted as the show goes throughout. So that's going to be part of the show, sadly. Another part of the show is going to be the Dome VP watch. The thinking was it was going to be Shapiro of Pennsylvania, but now he might be on the outs. The rumors are flying that it's going to be Tim Walz of Minnesota. Everyone listening to me right now in Minneapolis just drove their car off a bridge, but it may very well be Tim Walz. I'll keep you posted. If any of these things happen during the show, as a journalist, it's my obligation to tell you, so I will let you know. We really will. Chris, Michael, they're monitoring all this stuff. We're monitoring it during the breaks. We'll keep you posted whatever's going on out there, but we're done with politics for a few. I'm done with it. I'm going to talk a little bit of history because I think it might help give us a little bit of perspective on some possible rocky times, if today was the beginning of rocky times, or maybe just a little blip on the radar. I think a little history is not only fun and interesting and beneficial, but we can learn lessons from it. And then from that, that'll tie us right into the Medal of Honor citation, which, because of course it's Medal of Honor Monday time, but set all that aside for a moment. I want you to imagine something. I want you to imagine this, all right? You are, picture a football field in your mind. Football field. Everyone knows what one looks like. You are on the 10-yard line, right? You are 10 yards from the end zone. You're 10 yards from a touchdown. You have no cover because, obviously, it's a football field. You have no cover. If you get to the end zone, which is 10 yards away, you win. But I have four different machine gun nests aimed at you, and as soon as they start shooting, you're going to be torn to shreds. Let me ask you something. What would it take for you to walk that 10 yards, to attempt to walk that 10 yards? It's only 10 yards. Gosh, 10 yards is pretty easy, right? Is there any amount of money that it would take to walk that 10 yards? Okay, no on the 10 yards? What if it was 50 yards? What if it was 100 yards? What if you had to make that walk with no cover at all for 700 yards? Men have done that. Do you know that? Let's talk about Tarawa really quickly. I'm not going to do a huge backstory on the war in the Pacific. If you've listen to this show at all, you know a bunch of it, but just know, obviously, the attack in Pearl Harbor comes. The Japanese Imperial Empire, it was one of many attacks they launched over the next couple months. They did a bunch over that 48, 72 hours, but over the next couple months, their plan was, let's take over all kinds of different places, the Philippines and beyond. Let's fortify these places. We know the Americans will be angry. We know they'll counterattack. But we also know the Americans are super soft. We'll kill enough of them. Eventually, we'll sue for peace. And then no matter what happens, when the war is over, we will have more territory than we had at the beginning of the war, and we win. That was the Japanese thinking when they launched the attack on Pearl Harbor. Okay, so they attack Pearl Harbor. America gets fired up. We decide we're going to attack probably before we were ready, but we were trying to wrong foot the Japanese, and we attacked Guadalcanal. It was really the first major campaign of the war, Guadalcanal. It's a famous one. If you were a Marine, you know all about Guadalcanal. So the Guadalcanal, 2nd Marine Division, Guadalcanal. Okay, Guadalcanal ends. The 2nd Marine Division, they pull these guys out. They have suffered so many casualties. They are disease-ridden because Guadalcanal is a jungle nightmare. So we're talking beriberi, malaria, just horrible, horrible diseases. They pull this unit out and they send them to a place to rest and retrain and get some men to replace all the ones you've lost. So we're talking 2nd Marine Division here. Eventually, these men are prepped and ready to go. And then the United States military decides on taking Tarawa. Now, I'm going to give you just a little back and forth on how this went. There are many men, leaders at the time, who thought this entire campaign, the attempt to take Tarawa, was a critical mistake. There are many men like Chester Nimitz, the famous admiral, who said it was a no-brainer. You had to take Tarawa. But why would we take Tarawa? Well, remember this. Always remember this when it comes to the war in the Pacific. You are marching, essentially, just look at that Pacific Ocean. You're marching from Hawaii and you're trying to get to Japan. And you have all kinds of islands and island chains and things like that that are kind of on your way to Japan. And what you have to do if you're America is you have to decide which ones you're going to take, which ones you have to take, which ones you just kind of want to take. You're trying to take the islands because you're trying to take the airstrips. The Pacific War is an airstrip war. We believed in land-based bombers to help us take the next chain. So we were trying to get to, and we eventually did, the Mariana Islands. But before you got to the Mariana Islands, you had to get to the Marshall Islands. And before you got to the Marshall Islands, you had to get to the Gilbert Islands. And the Gilbert Islands brings us to a place called Tarawa. And I swear there's going to be a sunny, happier ending to this story when I get there. You're just going to have to bear with me. They choose the 2nd Marine Division, guys who had already been hardened in combat from Guadalcanal, although they had a lot of green troops now because a lot of guys died. And they say, hey, you go take Tarawa. Now, Tarawa is the most tiny, useless spit of ground you've ever seen in your life. It's 2 miles long by 800 yards wide. It's practically not even there. It's the kind of place, if you're there during a hurricane, you're going to die. It's not even, I don't even know how it's an island. It's not even there. But it is in a really important strategic location. And the Japanese know it's in an important strategic location. So they do something that would end up serving them very, very well, and it would serve us very, very poorly. They take one of, if not their finest defensive commanders, and they plant him on that island an entire year before we landed on Tarawa. An entire year. What, Chris, are you looking at the island? I know, there's nothing there. There's nothing there. All right, so they put this defensive commander on the island, and they tell him, fortify it, the Americans are coming. And this guy, using not only his Japanese troops, but using a lot of slave labor, the Japanese, really, they conscripted Koreans and Okinawans. They were always grabbing slave labor wherever they could. They were just, look, it was a very barbaric army, the Imperial Japanese Army. But using troops, slave labor, concrete, coconut logs, many, many other things, the Japanese spent an entire year building bunkers and trenches and pillboxes. And of course, they put an airstrip on there, creating a place of death that they didn't think the Americans could take. One Japanese commander famously said that it would take 1 million men to take Tarawa. Well, the 2nd Marine Division didn't show up with 1 million men. They showed up with themselves, the Navy, some Marines. And what happened next is one of the worst and least known days in World War II history. But this day will have a sunny ending to it. So we'll finish this up, do a Medal of Honor citation, get back to politics and Harris and the VP search and maybe some calls and other things. Before we get to any of those things, I have to share something with you right now. Pain sucks. Did you know that? I know that's breaking news. Pain sucks. It's awful. I have, at times in my life, gone through it. Something wrong. I had a stress fracture in my foot. The shoulder was messed up. And I did the standard Kelly thing where I just kind of ignored it. That's fine. I'm fine. Only I'm not fine. I'm snapping at my wife, the kids. I'm not sleeping well. I'm not working well because I'm not sleeping well. My mind is... Stop fighting through it. Stop toughing it out and start doing something about it. And I don't mean masking it. Your body is trying to fight that inflammation. Whatever you have, your back, your neck, or your muscles, your body's trying to fight it. Your body needs help. Get some relief factor in your body. It's the help your body needs. It helps support your body's natural response to inflammation. This is drug-free. Keep those drugs out of your body, all right? Take it for 3 weeks every day. Watch that pain disappear. Call 1-800-4-RELIEF or go to relieffactor.com. We'll be back.
Feeling a little stocky? Follow, like, and subscribe on social at Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Monday with market crashes in World War III. So we figure we might as well do some history. I haven't even done Medal of Honor yet because we're leading up to it. We're talking about Tarawa, and I'm not going to recap all that. If you miss any of it, go download a podcast. iHeart, Spotify, iTunes. It's all free. Just go click it on your little phone there, and it'll download. That's what they tell me anyway. All right, back to what we're talking about, Tarawa. 2nd Marine Division. We close in on Tarawa. But this is going to be an amphibious operation from sea to land. I know that's pretty obvious, but you need to understand something. It'll be really, really important to understand the timeline of this. This is in 1943. D-Day was when? 1944. When I say an amphibious operation, people instinctively picture D-Day, the Saving Private Ryan, or a book you read of the boats cruising right up. And this is one of the first amphibious operations we've gone on. And something goes terribly wrong. One, our guys were stuck as we approached the shore. Our guys ended up getting stuck in a bay. Why does that matter? Well, when you're approaching a shore and the enemy is trying to kill you before you get there, it's bad enough if you have rifle fire coming at you from one direction. But what if it was coming at you from the front, from the left, and from the right with interlocking fields of fire because they knew exactly where you'd be coming in and they have had a year to prepare for you coming in? The Marines begin to land on the beaches of Normandy after a long naval bombardment. But the problem was, again, we're learning how to do this. We didn't know how long the bombardment should be. Would you know if you'd never done this before? I wouldn't know. It's easy to look back, but how long do you have to take those gigantic naval guns and bomb the crap out of a place before it's sufficiently pacified? An hour? A day? A week? Who knows? Nobody knew. And when you have Marines pushing towards the shore, when do you stop the naval bombardment? Do you stop it when their feet are hitting the beach? I don't know if you've ever been in close proximity to artillery fire. I have had the distinct displeasure. Let me tell you something. You don't want to be landing on the beaches with naval gunfire also landing anywhere in the vicinity, or you are going to have a very bad day, so you have to stop before they get... Okay, you see what I mean. They end up stopping the naval gunfire when it turned out to be too early, and we were using the wrong shells. We didn't know yet that you would need penetration shells, armor piercing shells. Chris, why don't you grow up? We didn't know we would need that. So we bombard the place. They stop it too early. The Marines, the ones who are lucky enough to get to the beach, start dying immediately. And they have a seawall. The Japanese have built a seawall for their own purposes, a seawall made of coconut logs. It's in the water, I need to point out. It's sticking out of the water, but it's in the water. There is no other cover anywhere at all. And the Marines who begin to land in the first waves are dying so fast, they're stacked up on the beaches. The ones who are not dead are almost all cowering in the water behind the coconut logs because there's nowhere else to go. If you stick your head up at all, and many of them did, it gets taken off immediately because, again, you're being shot at by heavy machine guns from three different sides. And I need to stress this. This is one of the things about, even D-Day this will apply to, but we'll make it about Tarawa. One of the things people don't fully grasp. When you look at the total number of deaths, the total number of casualties in so many different battles, especially in the Pacific, they're not eye-popping like a Nazi versus a Red Army battle where you'd have 200,000 dead. They're nothing like that. It's 1,000 guys. It's 3,000 guys. But for the frontline units who landed first, it's oftentimes everyone. There were boats, 25-man boats that landed, and three men walked away. There were boats drifting out at sea for a long period of time after this, because they took so much machine gun fire on the way to the shore, everyone died, including the Navy guy driving the boat. And so the boat just kind of died and drifted off to sea full of dead Marines, full of dead sailors. The people who landed in the teeth of Tarawa died en masse, in droves. They were just dying and dying and dying. And those guys, they honestly might have had it better than the next wave that came, because the next wave that came ran into a problem. They had different boats than the first wave. And the Marines and the Navy, they didn't pay enough attention to the tides. There was a different tide that day, a special tide that day, and the water that was supposed to be 5 feet deep in some places was 3 feet deep, and a bunch of these boats ended up getting caught on the reef 700 yards from shore at the mouth of the bay, and Marines who were dying in the boats have no choice but to go over the side of the boat in water, no rocks, no logs, no bunkers, in water, and wade through 700 yards of machine gun fire before they got to the coconut log seawall where other Marines were hiding at the time. And they died in droves. And with all that, we're going to do the Medal of Honor citation, and then we'll say the good news, and then we'll get back to some political stuff. Sound good? Now, I have some good news for you. The good news is, no matter where you live, no matter who you are, you have access to something that can save your life from a very bad person who wants to hurt you. The Byrna pistol launcher. It's non-lethal, right? So even I don't like guns. Fine. I believe in carrying lethal and non-lethal, but maybe you don't like guns, or maybe your daughter doesn't or something. Fine. Shoots pepper balls or tear gas balls. It not only will stop a bad man for up to 40 minutes, it's legal in all 50 states. No permit needed, no background check needed. All you have to do is go to BYRNA, Byrna.com/Jesse, and get one for yourself. Get a holster, get a way to carry it. Don't just buy it, please. Buy it and carry it. There are bad people all around us now. Carry it on you at all times, and it might just save your life one day. Byrna.com/Jesse gets you 10% off. All right? We'll finish this up. Hang on.
Is he smarter than everyone?
Who knows?
Does he think so?
Yeah. The Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Monday. Remember, you can email the show love, hate, death threats, whatever you want, jesse@jessekellyshow.com. Finishing up our Medal of Honor citation here for Tarawa. It is time to do it. I just talked about the Marines who were stuck on the seawall at Tarawa. The Marines who are wading in from the surf. Marines and sailors are dying. They're dying in droves. It's one of those horrible days. In a day where everyone would have died had it not been for men like William James Bordelon. And without further ado, here it is. Ready, aim,
fire. Honoring those who went above and beyond. It's Medal of Honor Monday.
For valorous and gallant conduct above and beyond the call of duty as a member of an assault engineer platoon of the 1st Battalion, 18th Marines, tactically attached to the 2nd Marine Division in action against the Japanese-held atoll of Tarawa in the Gilbert Islands on the 20th of November, 1943. Landing in the assault waves under withering enemy fire, which killed all but four of the men in his tractor, Staff Sergeant Bordelon hurriedly made demolition charges and personally put two pillboxes out of action. Hit by enemy machine gun fire just as a charge exploded in his hand while assaulting a third position, he courageously remained in action and, although out of demolition, provided himself with a rifle and furnished fire coverage for a group of men scaling the seawall. Disregarding his own serious condition, he unhesitatingly went to the aid of one of his demolition men, wounded and calling for help in the water, rescuing this man and another who'd been hit by enemy fire while attempting to make the rescue. Still refusing first aid for himself, he again made up demolition charges and single-handedly assaulted a fourth Japanese machine gun position, but was instantly killed when caught in a final burst of fire from the enemy. Staff Sergeant Bordelon's great personal valor during a critical phase of securing the limited beachhead was a contributing factor in the ultimate occupation of the island, and his heroic determination throughout the 3 days of violent battle reflects the highest credit upon the U.S. Naval Service. And he gallantly gave his life for his country. And a bunch of Marines and sailors did. They died in the water. They died on the beaches. They drowned after being wounded. They died on a horrible spit of island that none of us will ever see. And they died brave men. And all of them deserve taps. You know, Tarawa was tremendously controversial at the time. At the time, it was met with a lot of public uproar over the slaughter. Now, obviously, details got back to the public back then the same way they would get back now. And as you can imagine, a lot of parents wanted to know why their 18-year-old son died wading into shore because the boat couldn't get over the coral reef. You know, it's one thing to die in combat. To die like that for the reasons men died over there doesn't make any sense. It certainly doesn't make any sense at the time. It creates anger, outrage. Nimitz, it was kind of his baby. Nimitz would get letters. He would open them. He talked about it. He would get letters from parents. You killed my son. You're the one responsible for killing my son. And it was, look, we won that battle. It was 3 days of horrific fighting, but we ended up winning. But I wanted to tell you that because I thought maybe it would help
in case we are going into some really, really rocky, crazy times, maybe we are going into a market that's going to keep dropping. I hope not. I think not, but who knows? Maybe we are going into World War III. It certainly looks like the Iran-Israel thing. That is looking increasingly inevitable. Maybe we're going into a dome presidency. I don't know. Maybe we are heading into some really, really rocky times. But I just want to say this about Tarawa. It's not famous. Most people don't know about it. Most people don't know anything about it. It's not famous like D-Day is famous. But let's talk about D-Day. D-Day was very, very successful for a long list of reasons. I'm not going to oversimplify it at all. But one of the main reasons we were equipped to pull off an operation like D-Day, the landing at Normandy, was because of Tarawa. You know, one of the main reasons you have Navy SEALs today? Did you know it was Tarawa? After that, we were so mortified by the fact that our boats were getting stuck on the reef. We didn't know about the tide. We didn't know about this. We didn't know about that. After that, they decided we really need some advanced reconnaissance teams, some UDT, they were known as, underwater demolition teams. We needed some very brave, very, very capable men who could go in before the battle and mark where the fortifications are, blow things up if necessary, figure out the depth here, the depth there, where's there a machine gun nest. That was the genesis of the U.S. Navy SEALs. Tarawa. D-Day. Tarawa. In fact, every amphibious landing from that point forward in the war, it was in large part influenced by Tarawa and the lessons we learned there. Hard times, even horrible times, even deadly times, times that cost us lives, they can be used to learn valuable, valuable lessons about the future, about what's really important. Look, we weren't sinking big money into amphibious vehicles before then. And finally, we figured out, wow, we really need things that can cruise through the surf and actually land on the beaches. A lot of the best lessons, most of the best lessons in life are learned through hardship. And I'm not trying to in any way minimize or be dismissive of the fact that you woke up today and your 401k took a beating and might take another one tomorrow. I know. I get it. But just know that we'll get through it, hopefully. Most of us will anyway, and out the back end, we'll learn some lessons, all right? All right. Let's do some emails before we get back to all the politics and things like that. Dear Jesse, oh, this lady's mad at Trump. Dear Jesse, I wish Trump had not started calling Kemp names, but for, okay, so let me update everyone who might not know. I'm not going to read the whole post, but Trump took to social media and gave it to Brian Kemp, the governor of Georgia. He gave it to him both barrels and brought up his wife in the post. It was a long post. I'm not going to read the whole thing. It just, that's in case you're not on the uptake. That's what Trump was blasting away. He was blasting away at Kemp on social media. She said, I think Kemp should have bowed to Trump. Kemp should have come out quickly and expressed his support. Jesse, will Republicans ever grow unity? I can't use that word like the Democrats do. Will they ever do unity? And her name is Diane. Okay, so let's discuss this Trump-Kemp thing, unity, what we can expect going forward. I understand you're frustrated. Let's discuss a couple things. Before we do that, I touched on this earlier. I want to point this out. You know, chalk is a lot more than male vitality stacks and female vitality stacks. I only say that because I personally take a male vitality stack. I love it. It just how I feel, how my mind feels, my energy level and in my mood and how my mind feels clear. That's the best parts of it for me. It has been life-changing. It really has been. But maybe that's not for you. Maybe you can't even afford one of those things. I get all that. What if you just started out your day with chocolate powder? Pack full of vitamins, minerals, everything you need. I start every day with it. Wake up first thing, honestly, first thing, before I brush my teeth half the time, pour it in, glass of water or milk, mix it up, chug it. Boom. Take off like a rocket ship that day. And you know that Chuck shares and promotes our values. These are anti-communists. That's why they found the show. These are our people. Go to Chuck.com, C-H-O-Q.com. Promo code Jesse gets you a huge discount on subscriptions. All right? All right, we'll talk about this Trump-Kemp thing next.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show. If you missed any part of our show, download whatever you want. iHeart, Spotify, iTunes. We did some economy talk, patriotism talk. We did some history, Medal of Honor Monday. Now, let's dig into this whole Trump-Kemp thing. Got a bunch of emails about this. People are frustrated. Look, I got a bunch of emails on it. Oracle, you've always talked about how the system, the first few system disruptors are not tough enough or smart enough. Trump is proving that now. He's mad about the Trump thing. Going up against an all-powerful system. Instead, he's going back to unforced errors. I've seen this movie before. Okay, so first, I understand what you're saying about the Trump, the social media post blasting Georgia's governor. First, we need to talk about the background of this a little bit. All right. Maybe you'll love this or not, but this is just, it is what it is. Donald Trump believes to his core that the 2020 presidential election was stolen from him. He believes there was cheating. He believes that Brian Kemp of Georgia allowed, facilitated, whatever way you want to put it, he believes Brian Kemp of Georgia is at least partially responsible for him no longer being in the White House. I am not, just stop for a second. Don't start screaming at me. I'm not justifying blasting away 3 months before the election at him on social media. I'm not. I'm trying to explain how he thinks. Also, there's this. As I have said before, Donald Trump is a junkyard dog. What does that mean? He attacks everyone. Everyone who I don't even want to say lashes out at him, because it doesn't always have to be that. Anyone who makes him angry for any reason, Trump will blast you. He will blast you without hesitation, and he's not going to change. This is a 70-some-year-old billionaire, former president of the United States of America. Those guys don't change their ways for anyone for any reason. He is a junkyard dog. Now, you love the junkyard dog when he eats the robber who broke in to kill your family. You hate the junkyard dog when he eats the mailman and you go to prison or get sued. But nevertheless, that's what he is. This is how Trump does politics. It's not going to change. Ideally, because Georgia is a swing state, Trump needs to win. Remember, electorally, remember this. Remember, we need to, in November, we need to sweep the Sun Belt. We need to sweep the Arizonas, the Georgias. We need to own those. And then we need to, if we own those, we need to pick off one of Ohio, Pennsylvania, or Wisconsin. That is the presidential election. That's what you need to pay attention to. Sweep the Sun Belt, grab one of those states. Sweep the Sun Belt, grab one of those states. Is it strategically sound for any reason to blast the governor and his wife, which he kind of did, in one of the critical Sun Belt states 3 months before the election? And remember, we're 1 month before people start voting. No, it's not true. I don't know what you want me to say. It's dumb. It's a dumb thing to do. But he's not going to change. And this is the way it is. And it's him or dome. Look, it's him or this.
So you're now no longer are you necessarily keeping those private files in some file cabinet that's locked in the basement of the house. It's on your laptop. And it's then, therefore, up here in this cloud that exists above us, right? It's no longer in a physical place.
And we can't afford that. All right, so Maybe that helped. Maybe it didn't. Look, do you want to feel better? You want to feel better? I'll make you feel better about something. My wife told me I have small hands. Oh, Chris, I've never been more devastated. I forgot to tell you. I have big hands. Everyone who's watching on the simulcast right now can see. You can watch me do the radio show on the first TV. You can they simulcast it. I'm doing it live right in front of you right here. It's not like I'm hiding in a dungeon somewhere. Do you see these hands? Look at the size of these hands. I can pretty much, what, Chris? I can pretty much palm a basketball with these hands. Yes, I can, Chris. Yes, I can. It depends on the basketball. There's got to be a good grip, but I can. No, not a little Nerf ball. No, like a full-size basketball. Whatever, Chris. But we were at lunch the other day, and she just looks and she says, you know, your hands aren't that big. I've never been told that in my entire life. I've always been told my hands are huge. So maybe you're feeling down about the state of the race and all that. At least your wife didn't drop that little bomb on you. Small hands. Jesse. Oh, this is not nice. Jesse, look into Bosley products to regrow your hair. They're legit. I don't know what Bosley products are, but I'll have... It's Bosley? It's Bosley? Chris, how do you know? What is it? Whatever. What would you know about it? You have hair. You don't know anything about this stuff. Anyway, look, I'll have you know I don't need your Bosley or whatever this person's name is. I don't need to meet them at all. Why? You know, I know it's been a lot of bad news today, and we've all lost our retirement account, and Dome is getting ready to pick that nutball from Minneapolis for Minnesota to be her VP, and I know all that's bad in World War III and stuff, but get this. So I got out of the shower today, and I was shaving my neck because I couldn't show up with a neck beard on a Monday. I got out of the shower today, and I was shaving my neck. You know how I have this little widow's peak up here because I'm balding, my hairline's retreating? Got a couple little hairs sprouting out in there. What, Chris? Why are you rolling your eyes? We're getting the band back together. I'm telling you, the body is what? Don't shake your head. My body is... Have you ever seen any of the Wolverine movies or read the comic books? What, Chris? Listen, my body regenerates in very similar to what Wolverine's does. I was bald for a short period of time. I woke up today and look, there were two hairs. It was two. I counted them. There were two. I didn't cut them off. I didn't shave them off. Tomorrow, might be three. Might be four the next day. I don't know where we're going to go from here. All I know is these luscious locks are coming back, right? And I also know that these people are freaking demons.
What week of pregnancy should abortion access be cut off?
We need to restore the protections of Roe versus Wade. Not trying to do something new.
Well, that was nebulous because it was about viability, which could be anywhere between 20 to 24 weeks.
No. Let me be very clear.
The Women's Health Protection Act that the White House also endorsed.
Let me be very clear. From day one, the president has been clear. I have been clear. We need to put back the protections that are in Roe v. Wade.
They can't answer the question because Kamala Harris and every Democrat believes you should execute a baby all the way up to birth. And after birth in some cases. And that's why preborn is there. Fighting back against this with the power of ultrasound. The power of ultrasound. Finding these young women who are about to kill their babies and giving them an ultrasound free. It costs preborn $28 to give that woman an ultrasound. When she hears the heartbeat, she chooses life almost every time. Your $28 buys a life. People will walk the planet because of you. Preborn.com/Jesse is where you give. Sponsored by Preborn. We still have an hour. Hang on.
This is an iHeart podcast.